What's going on, Avs fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Avalanche Warning Podcast, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm Bailey Curtis, as always, joined by Gavin Oseguera and Grant Foster. Guys, I know we were kind of scrounging for some, you know, things to talk about last week, and it seems like the hockey gods have come to our rescue for this episode. Thank God. Yeah, as soon as our last episode dropped, we got some news about our boy in burgundy and blue, Josh Manson, coming back to the Avalanche on an extension that will kick into gear after this upcoming season when the cap significantly increases. He was just signed to a 2-year, $3.95 million deal. Gavin, start with you. I personally, with the cap going up, really, 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 really like this deal.
No, I do too. Really. I feel like for the longest time, my white whale in the most negative way possible was talking about Josh Manson's on a horrible contract for the Colorado Avalanche. I don't like how much money he makes. $4.5 million is currently his contract now. After the cup window, after the Avs won their 2022 Stanley Cup, they signed him to an outrageous amount of money. They would complain about how they didn't have enough money to sign Kadri. And I would always think, like, huh, maybe if you didn't sign Josh Manson to an outrageous contract, you would have some money. Yeah. But it would kind of – but thinking more and more, the comfort amount of money that I would be like, sign him to this amount of money would be $3.5 million. That's my, like, give him that. I think he's worth that amount. I think the grit he brings, I think his playoff performances justify it. I mean, we see Sam Bennett making like $8 million for a guy who only put up 50 points one season in the entire NHL. So obviously playoffs matter because cups are won in June, not April. But really it's a situation where I look at Josh Manson and I say, like, okay, $4.95 million. That's about $4,000 that I'm not exactly comfortable with, but I'll grit my teeth and I'll say, like, okay, that's more in the line of what I prefer him to make. And in a situation, like you mentioned, where the cap is going up and the amount of stupid contracts, quite frankly, that get signed with, you see Ryan Lindgren getting signed to $4.5 million, just bad money in general. All of these horrible amounts of contracts given to defenders who are just like okay at best. And then you see Josh Manson actively taking less, where more money is being added into the league every year. I have to commend him for it. I honestly really like it. He clearly wants to spend the rest of his career in Colorado. That seems to be a trend with a lot of players that come here, see Brock Nelson, see players that just come here and they love it. So I'm here for it. All the players that want to come here and stay and love it here, absolutely will make room for you.
Absolutely. No, not just talking about, you know, the cap going up. This is like, even with that going up, this is a bit of a pay cut for Josh Manson. And I think given what we saw from him last season, and Grant, I'll let you kind of comment on this here next, given what we saw from him last season, his inability to consistently stay healthy. But when he is healthy, he's contributing good physicality. He's giving the team a lot of good energy when he's out there on the ice. Grant, your thoughts on Josh Manson? And I will pose this as well. And Gavin, you kind of mentioned it, his play between, you know, regular season Josh Manson versus postseason Josh Manson.
Well, I got to agree with Gavin here. You know, he's taking a discount and it's really, with the cap going up, it's going to be a beautiful contract. It's going to be 3% of the cap on your, it's going to be your most physical defenseman. And honestly, the guy you throw on the third line, just to say, hey guy, just to say to the 6'4" guy on the other team, you better keep your head up on the ice because, you know, you're going to get a big hit coming your way, Mason Marchment. this is the type of contract that, let alone Manson, any team is going to be wanting to sign their third D pair man, especially physical. If you have guys like Radko Gudas, you have Kulikov, You have a lot of big bruisers around the NHL who fits perfectly on the third D pair. You know, he's not going to the Stanley Cup tax has worn off for sure, especially with the fact that I don't think he's eclipsed 70 games in the last two seasons. I could be wrong. Well, someone check me on that, please. But that Stanley Cup tax that we saw with, you know, Kadri, it's kind of wearing off. You know, Bo Byram, that wore off when he just signed for 6.5. The Confer one wore off. You know, it's coming to the point now where, you know, even guys who have been sticking with the team for a while, it's going to be wearing off. But, like, honestly, a little bit like this Brock Nelson deal, it's the perfect kind of deal for the perfect player that you need in that position. You're not locking yourself into a dumb contract like the Matt Dumbo one that the Stars are still trying to get rid of, like the main Achilles heel right now for them, you know. And it's not such a great deal like Jonathan Tavares, where you're thinking, man, he's taking this huge hometown discount. It's the perfect deal. And, you know, as much fault as I personally give McFarland and Sakic, you know, they've done really well with some of these extensions. Maybe not the Brock Nelson one, because that's a little bit more of a question mark. But the Blackwood deal at 5.5 is great. This deal at 3.9 is great. And honestly, we just have to be thankful that he is taking a pay cut, because, you know, we have Makar's massive contract coming up here soon. And anything less than $15 million for Makar is going to be not very good. I mean,
steal.
Yeah, you throw everything at Makar. That is your franchise going forward.
That is basically a you give him a blank check and you get what you get.
Right. I mean, everybody's talking about McDavid, right? And everybody's talking about McDavid for next season. McDavid is like the best player in the world, hands down. If I'm sorry, Avalanche fans, if you're going to say McKinnon's better, I'm sorry. You're just wrong. And I love McKinnon, but I mean, McDavid's better. But if there's a guy you want to build a franchise around, it's going to be Cale Makar. Bailey and I were talking about this at one point. We were saying that he would wear the C. We were debating him or McKinnon wearing the C when he goes, you know, when Landeskog eventually retires, because Landeskog has a limited amount of time, especially with that kind of surgery. And
I was gonna say, you and I disagreed a little bit on who got the C. I will make that a little clear.
It will be Cale Makar. Nathan McKinnon is a leader by example, but Cale Makar is more of a guy you kind of talk to into the locker room. He's more of a vocal guy. McKinnon leads by example. And I mean, Manson signing this deal is gonna be great. And now we just have to look at what we have going forward with other contracts like Natchez, Girard going forward. We have Colton going forward that we have to look at, but we will get into that in a second. But on to Bailey, what her thoughts are on this, unless you don't have any.
No, I think you guys kind of hit the nail on the head here. I mentioned earlier, I really like the energy and the brute force and the pesty kind of nature that Josh Manson brings when he's on the ice. For the 48 games that he played in the regular season, it's and most of that, if not all of that, was due to injury. He had some recurring wrist issues, some upper body issues that kind of plagued him a little bit. Something I do want to bring your attention to is time on ice. And maybe this is a good segue into a different defenseman who I know we had on the docket to talk about today. Maybe not the one you guys are thinking about. Time on ice totals for Josh Manson and Sam Girard. 18:50 for Josh Manson, 17 minutes and 38 seconds for Sam Girard. For second pair minutes, I think when you look at that, just goes to show the trust I think that Bednar has in that second pair when they're put out there. Looking at Sam Malinsky, currently he had an average ice time of 14 minutes per game. So Which brings me into a recent signing that the Avalanche also made in Brent Burns. Want to bring this to your guys' attention. Okay. On the top line, or top pair, with the Carolina Hurricanes last season, Brent Burns' time on ice average was 20 minutes, 57 seconds. We saw reports coming in earlier this week about how Carolina wanted to bring Brent Burns back on a friendly deal, but made it very, very clear to him that he was going to have a very diminished role with the incoming defenseman in Nikishin and restructuring their whole kind of defensive system about making sure he gets the ice time that he's grown to earn and deserve over the last couple of years in the KHL, proving the kind of defenseman he is. Totally understandable. What's interesting to me is, if you're expecting Brent Burns to play Sam Molinsky minutes, 6 minutes is a bit of a drop-off for a guy like Brent Burns.
Well, you're not expecting him. You're not expecting him to. I mean, yeah. I mean, do I think he's going to get 20 minutes on ice with Makar and Taves getting 23, 24 respectively? No. I think a realistic option is kind of just what you just said with Girard and Manson, where they're getting 18 minutes on ice. I mean, I think he will get a tiny bit more because he is a little bit more value. Like we've talked about, he can be on the power play, and he definitely will be used on the PK. You know, it's just fortunate that Carolina didn't want to keep him, and we got him for $1 million. I mean, could you ask for a better deal there? No, you cannot. Thank you, Carolina, even though you absolutely bent us over in the Mikko trade.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, you look at Carolina's decor, and they have like Slavin and Sean Walker and K'Andre Miller coming into the fold, as well as Alexander Nikishkin. And you have Shane Gostisbehere on the right side, as well as Jaden Chatfield. And you have like no room for a Brent Burns. So when people say like, oh, what does this mean for Colorado? I think what it meant for Brent Burns when it talks about like they just told him you'd have a reduced role, I think what they basically told him was you're not going to have a consistent spot on this roster. I think what happened was he looked at Colorado and they said, yeah, you can be a bottom pairing guy. And then sometimes when we feel like the Josh Manson, Sam Girard pairing isn't working, we'll move you up to second pairing. That was the best offer Brent Burns had. So that's what he took. When it comes to like switching those two around, obviously with the contracts and we're talking about the money and how it works, I keep looking at like a Sam Girard as a guy that the Avalanche could possibly move, especially because like all of the, you know, the rumors.
Here we go.
Here we go. buckle up. Yeah, all of the rumors for the longest time with Sam Girard was they're going to move him, which obviously never happened. They're very attached to him. But I think this year has the most potential for it because he's kind of the odd man out. And really, for the longest time, I kind of had the opinion of like Sam Girard is underrated. He's like important to this roster. But really just like fully looking at his stats, looking at what he actually does for the Colorado Avalanche, it's not much. He doesn't do a lot that's worth his value at $5 million. Now, obviously, I think he's a great regular season player, and I think he's the perfect yin and yang to Josh Manson, where like I hate him in the regular season, but I love him in the playoffs. And Sam Girard is like, I look at Josh Manson in the playoffs and I say, this guy, like defensive, might be a liability sometimes. He takes too many penalties. But offensively, like, man, this guy's a dog. Sam Girard, I forgot you were here until you let up another goal with your horrible coverage. Like, I really have come to the conclusion that Sam Girard is a complete liability on this roster. I don't like the guy whatsoever. I think he should be moved. I think his only value to this Avalanche team right now is to be traded for assets and to be made a move. I look at a guy like Nate Schmidt, and I say, can someone wake up Chris McFarland and get him to actually make moves to help this roster? Because at this point, I look at what Nate Schmidt does. And he's a bottom pairing defenseman, sort of. I would rather have him in Sam Girard's spot as a second pairing defenseman than Sam Girard. Mate Schmidt makes $3.5 million, Stanley Cup champion, played with the Florida Panthers. His analytics are great. What he does is he plays good defense, and he provides some offense as well. And we saw this in the playoffs. Nothing that Sam Girard can ever say he's ever done in his entire career, because all this guy does is get beaten in front of the net. He gets completely exposed every time. And I know people love him. I know people glaze him all the time and say, like, oh, he's so great. He does so much good things. He plays such good defense. He's able to – all the little underlings. And it's like, cool. The underlings I see him is constantly getting beat on the back door, letting up goals, being the defensive pair with Manson that gets consistently scored on. But the thing that he doesn't have over Manson is Manson actually provides offense. And Sam Girard, through the last – 4 playoff series, has either provided 3 points or less on this entire offense. So I don't know, dude. You don't really have as much offense to speak of, and you don't really do a lot. I would rather have Nate Schmidt making less money in your position, who's not a defensive liability at this point. And as much as I like Sam Girard, I think he's a good guy. I'm glad he's able to recover mentally, because obviously he had that stint in the NHL player assistance program. And I hope he's doing a lot better. But really, it's a situation now where you've been running back the same second pair over and over again. You've been doing Josh Manson, Sam Girard, and you're saying that's a good pairing. It's not, dude. It hasn't been working. It hasn't worked ever. It was not the pairing that won you the cup. The pairing that won you a cup was like some bastardization of this defense where you just said, like, I don't know, put Bo Byram and Josh Manson together. And it worked. And then you chose to actively keep Sam Girard instead of keeping Nazem Kadri. And how has that worked out for you? You've won one series in 3 years. That's how it's worked out for you. I don't know how this GM still has a job. That's just.
I think revisionist history.
I'll throw it over to you, Josh. Or sorry, fuck Grant.
I think revisionist history is the biggest thing here, right? So, I mean, if you go on Puckpedia, you see Samuel Girard has a 19 no trade list. And if we're going back to defensemen the Avalanche have had, and one of them being Bowen Byram, who just signed for $6.5 million for 2 years, honestly, is the contract that you would want as the Colorado Avalanche. A guy who's still young. Yes, he has concussion issues. Yes, it's always going to be there. But again, a guy who's young, a guy you drafted fourth overall in that same trade that you got rid of Duchesne, you actually got both of those guys, Samuel Girard and Bo Byram.
What a trade tree.
And, but revisionist history here. I mean, if Samuel Girard, if that contract is just structured a little bit differently and you're not trading Bowen Byram, who you had no protections against, you're not trading him away to the Buffalo Sabres, and you're finding Girard a different landing spot, maybe for a prospect or something, you know, then you have Bo Byram. You would sign Bo Byram this offseason and have your solution for your second D pair for at least the next 3 years. If assuming Manson stays for 3 years and they don't trade him, and assuming, you know, or maybe Brent Burns stays all around. I can't imagine that he does, though. And honestly, it's small things like this that you kind of review back on Chris McFarland, and you ask yourself the question, why? Now, I understand in order to get something like Casey Mittelstadt at the time, you had to give something. You had to give somebody young. You could not give, because Buffalo already had Owen Power and Dahlin, two stellar left-handed defensemen. But, you know, your answers were just staring at you in the face for your future, and you kind of traded that future away for what was a band-aid, really, and you didn't even keep that band-aid for a full season. You didn't even keep that for a full 82 games, which is really disheartening to see. You know, it's things like that that really bite you in the ass as a GM. It really does. Because if you go back a year, you're trading Girard, you're finding a landing spot for Girard and getting somebody who's younger, you can develop. You have Sam Alinsky that you are developing currently. You have Keaton Milton who you are developing currently. And, you know, that is really the piece. And I will say, as someone who very much dislikes Girard, the $5 million price tag, especially right now, if we had a different cap situation, like if you've heard Steve Dangle podcasts, like I listen to him all the time. When he signed the contract, there was a thought process that the cap was going to go up, but the cap didn't go up. So that $5 million in another universe where maybe the cap would be at $113 million, like it's going to be in 2 years, that $5 million doesn't look so – that $5 million doesn't look as bad. It looks like a stain, but it's not that bad, you know. And then – but, you know, if you – but comparatively now, that's a decent chunk of change. I mean, there's a lot of guys in the NHL who are getting $5 million as a defenseman who you're saying, you know, that is a stellar defenseman. And we rag on him all the time. And let's be honest, he's good in the regular season. He's good. But we're not as a team who's trying to win a Stanley Cup. We don't care. Like, regular season success is great and all, but all that matters for the Avalanche is what you can do in April and what you can do in May and what you can do in June. That's it. And Samuel Girard, unfortunately, just does not fit that bill.
You know, and something I want to bring up as well, and I feel, Grant, I know you and I have talked about this briefly, about how generally when you look around the league, teams really only put their eggs into one small defenseman per team. The Avalanche are currently riding with Samuel Girard and Sam Malinsky, who are both under 6 foot. Grant, I feel like I've heard this enough from you that I hear it in my sleep. But we talk about the Florida Panthers and their defensive core going into their cup run and how none of them are under 6 foot. And, you know, you obviously see the desire from the Avs front office to develop Sam Malinsky a little bit more. You see how much trust they have in him as a developing third pair defenseman. With Samuel Girard's contract, it's a little interesting to me that the Manson-Girard pairing is as trusted as it is. Not to say that they both don't have their moments to shine. It's a little fishy to me, I suppose.
Well, you know, I can't, for Manson, it's a little more difficult. I will say this about Girard, though. When the Avalanche were terrible in 2016-17, that was actually the year they had gotten, that was the year after, or no, they really sucked in 2015-16. Was it 15-16 they really sucked, or was it 16-17? Anyways, the year after is when they had Samuel Girard, and they've really, I think the main problem with the Avs is that they either cut someone loose too early or they cut someone loose way too late. Like if you looked at Alex Newhook, that was a little bit late for some people, a little early for some other people. Excuse me. If you look at Tyson Jost, that was way, way, way too late for, you know, your 10th overall pick. You know, and then there's some guys that you kind of give up early, like Bowen Byram. There's other guys that you give up early where they maybe not, you're not looking at your franchise forward or your franchise defenseman, but you're looking at a guy who can play third line minutes for forwards, or a third D pair minutes for D, or even a backup goalie. And, you know, Girard is the living embodiment of the Avalanche not realizing something does not stick anymore. They learned it. They learned, had to learn it with Tyson Jost, and they're going to learn it again with Samuel Girard. They love him. They trust him. But at some point, you do have to look overall at someone who is declining with the years and say that this isn't working anymore. We love this guy, but he might have to get going. And that's just how sports is. That if you don't perform at the level that you need to, you're going to be replaced, unless you're like on the Carolina Panthers or like the Anaheim Ducks or like the San Jose Sharks, and you're just okay with losing.
The Carolina Panthers?
Yes. I'm talking about franchises that don't care. I'm talking about franchises that don't care.
Okay. little jab to the heart. I see how it is. No, I guess size was like my biggest kind of qualm there. And I would, point being, as much as I might like Sam Girard, or at least I don't hate him as much as you guys do, apparently.
We're going to get merch that says, "Do you hate Samuel Girard too?" with a question mark. That should be our merch. Hopefully. We should totally do that. I'll wear that every single podcast.
I'm getting you a sign for your background.
Yeah. Do you hate Samuel Girard too? Thank you.
Oh God. Moving into or away from defensemen for a little bit. Some other big news also dropped this week. Guys, we have a schedule for the 2025-2026 regular season. Let's go ahead and kind of analyze this thing a little bit. We already knew before the big schedule drop that the Avalanche were going to be one of six teams playing on the entire league's opening night. They are rounding out a three-game series. I guess I'm calling it a series on opening night. They will be the last game played that day against the Los Angeles Kings. They are again starting their season on the West Coast at Crypto.com Arena. Interestingly enough, they will be ending their season in Seattle on April 16th, which will be the first time Ryan Lindgren will return to Colorado since since signing in free agency.
Deal, trade deadline acquisition, get out of here.
Something that was kind of interesting to me when I was kind of going through the games here. First off, 12 back-to-backs for the Avalanche this upcoming season. You got to play them. 12 is, if I'm not mistaken, about the average that you'll see around the league.
Yeah, the top teams playing back-to-backs are at like 16, I think.
Yeah, so, it's a lot, sure, and you want to try to avoid them as much as possible. You can't 82 games is a lot of games, but at the same time, I don't know. It's just how it shakes out. 18 matinee games for the Colorado Avalanche this year, which I personally am not super mad about. I think 18 is on the higher end for NHL teams this year. So that's something, if Avalanche fans, you guys are looking for some earlier games and want to get a little bit of beauty sleep during the season, you'll have 18 days to do so. Five games at the end of the season. This is where I kind of wanted to go into my Seattle, not rant, but just a little bit of interesting information. The last division rival that the Avalanche will play for the regular season is going to be a weird, like, at St. Louis or host St. Louis than at St. Louis situation. St. Louis is going to be the last division rival that they play all season, and that'll come on April 7th. The last five games in the Avalanche's regular season are all against Pacific Division teams, which is a little, I don't know, like that little tidbit of information. Normally, in that last stretch of games, you like to see a lot of divisional matchups. Winnipeg's going to be March 28th. You're looking at Dallas April 4th. And then, like I said, those two St. Louis games. The fact that no division rivals exist in the last five games is a little interesting to me. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that or any other little bits of the schedule or.
Yeah, I mean, I think NHL scheduling is a lot like real life. When you try and make it as fair as you possibly can, you don't try and discriminate. You just try and make it a very fair blanket thing. But eventually, the way you figure out someone's got to get screwed along the line. Someone's got a lot of back-to-back games. Someone's got plenty of matinee games. Somebody just doesn't play their division rivals toward the end. And that might be a blessing, honestly, because it could help you get easier matchups and better standings. Honestly, I didn't know where I was going with that analogy at the beginning, but I liked it. The more
I liked it too.
But yeah, no, I mean, really, I think it's just how it is. I mean, the NHL doesn't really discriminate. The NHL doesn't really give a lot of like benefits or like try and rig things unless you're Vegas. So I think that really it's just kind of how it's going to be. I mean, the Avs get the benefit of not playing division rivals and they get to play the softest division in the NHL in the Pacific Division, like with the last few April games. Cool. I can already see it now. The Avs are going to rest the majority of their guys going down the stretch and they're just going to chill and not get injured. So it's how I will never complain about an easy April. I just won't. Okay. And it's really just a situation where you just kind of got to take the luck that you get. Matinee games, I'll take them over 8:30 games any day of the week.
Absolutely.
I hate going to sleep, watching an Avs game in the first period, waking up and seeing that they're somehow in overtime when they were winning 3-0. That's not fun. I don't enjoy that experience. It's like a nightmare. But it's how it goes. So really, I don't really have a huge problem with it. I think it's all right. But what about you, Grant?
I mean, I think the schedule's fine, you know, especially with the Olympics this year. I mean, there's probably going to be like more questionable things. Like sometimes like you're going to have weird situations where you're playing at home with San Jose and then you're going to Minnesota. Like there's always these weird quirks that they do. I will say though, they have gotten a lot better, especially the NHL. They've gotten a lot better about like keeping teams. Like if you're going to go on the East Coast, you're going to play like, if you're going on the road, you'll play like three teams on the East Coast. You're not like going to Boston, then going down to Florida, then going up to Carolina, then going up to Montreal. Like they've gotten a lot better about this, honestly, over the past few years. Because I remember like a couple years ago, I mean, my God, the Avalanche were playing the Kraken, I think. And then they were like on the road to Nashville, and then they were on the road to New York. And I was like, what? And then they came home for a game and then went out to LA. It was like, dude, what the like? Like, I understand. You got 32 teams. You're trying to make 82 games work. But my God, there's got to be a better way here.
And I will say, and this is going to be one of the next points that I get into as well. When we're talking about a homestand, we're looking at our longest homestand being 7 games in the month of January. From January 8th to January 23rd, you've got 7 teams coming into town in Ottawa, Columbus, Toronto, Nashville, Washington, Anaheim, and Philadelphia. The longest stretch of games that they are going to be away from home, 4. And that'll happen 3 times this season. I don't mind that at all. And I feel like I can speak for the players in saying I don't think they mind either. 4 games is not a bad stretch. So that'll happen in December. And to your point, I think they structured this really, really nicely. That first stretch in December, they're sticking around New York. They'll hit Philadelphia. They'll hit Nashville. And then they're back home. In January, when it happens again, they're going on like a little Canadian road trip before they hit Detroit, and then they come back home. So they'll hit Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal. The next time it'll happen in March. The only outlier team maybe there is Winnipeg. But even then, that's going to happen at that's going to round out their road trip. They're going to hit Chicago, Washington, Pittsburgh, head up to Winnipeg, head back home. So I personally really like how they structured a lot of these away games. They've got a back-to-back situation happening in November, actually, now that I'm looking at it and pointing it out, where they'll hit Edmonton, Vancouver, and then come home. Not necessarily East Coast, but W scheduling, if we're using those kinds of terms. So this is one of the better schedules that I think I've seen when it comes to, you know, past years. I really like how it was structured. You got a long homestand appealing to fans there. I think the team's really going to enjoy having that one. But overall, it's not super out of this world as far as travel goes.
I will say, though, it's a curse for the Avalanche. They need rigid scheduling to be good. If they get like even 2 days, 3 days off, my God, do they look like they haven't played hockey in like a month?
I will say there might be a few of those. I'm looking at a stretch.
Funny what I noticed is like the Canadian road trips always end with like the Avs crossing back into the US and playing Detroit. Like that's kind of always how they schedule it, like every year. Mm-hmm. And then the Avs go, they beat Detroit. It's fun. Everyone remembers the rivalry. Detroit, like leave it to Detroit to take the fun out of winning because they suck as a team. And Steve Yzerman isn't as good of a GM as everyone glazes him to be.
Yzerplan,
bro. Yeah, we've beaten you like 20 times.
Big fan of that. Big fan of that. Keep doing that. Except actually, can you go to the Dallas Stars so you can mess up their organization too? That'd be great.
Exactly. But it's a lot of fun. Keep doing it.
Leave Mikko Rantanen on an island like you have Dylan Larkin. And let's see how well he does without anybody by his side.
No, but it's good. I think the scheduling has a lot of trouble sometimes in the West because the West has so much travel. Mm-hmm. But really for the Avs, I feel like this is not as bad of a scheduling thing. And really, mm-hmm. I think the 7-game homestand is going to be especially happening in January where the Avs tend to play like their worst hockey. Like January and February seem to be like the tough times for the Avs. And then, you know, like March and April are always like the fun times. But I think that having that like big segment where the Avs are chilling is going to be a lot to relieve like the pressure and the wear and tear of the regular season.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of homestands, I'm not sure where I was going with that segue. Want to kind of dive. We talked a little bit about the blue line. Want to switch over to the forward core and in bringing Necas into the fold. You know, summer has officially started when Necas rumors start popping back up, and that happened earlier this summer when a certain reporter came out and said that he maybe wasn't thrilled with his time in Colorado. Another report came out from a different insider saying that if you were to put a $9 million contract in front of Necas, he likely would not take it because of the amount of self-belief that he has. And while I think that is great to have, there's also reality, I think, to look at, unfortunately. So reports coming out today that Necas is potentially looking for a contract in the ballpark of $10 million or more. Now, taking into account that last year was a career year for Martin Necas, you get into the playoffs and he plays like his classic self, kind of falls off the face of the planet. Grant, I will start with you here. I know you're the kind of resident Necas hater here.
I'd like to call his self-belief delusion, but that's just me personally. I mean, okay. Let's talk about it this way, right? Necas is going to be because McKinnon's 30. Your star guy, Nathan McKinnon, he's getting older. You know, if you sign Necas to a long-term deal, that's realistically who becomes your new guy once McKinnon kind of, you know, loses a step a little bit. But $10 million, even with the cap going up to $113 million, and especially since next year, it's only going to be $104 million. I say only, but, you know, $10 million is a lot in that instance. Let's just say how it is. If he is on a Kraken, Ducks, Flames, you know, a team that's kind of looking to get into the hunt, but like not really what you would think as a contender, or at least what we still think the Avalanche are contenders, hopefully, and they don't fall off of the face of the earth. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're those kind of teams, like, yeah, $10 million is like, yes, that would be a great deal for Martin Necas. However, in reality, Martin Necas, in his best career season, only has is like 7 more points than Brock Nelson does in his career season. Brock Nelson put up 75 points in his best ever career season, and Natchez has put up 83. So sorry, not 7, but 8. Are you really asking for $10 million out of this guy when, honestly, he's great. He's great in the regular season. He's fast. He's got skill. But he reminds me of like a Trevor Zegras. You can't like he cannot put it together when it matters. And if you're a team like the Avalanche, you got to put it together when it matters. There is no margin for error in the postseason anymore. Now that sounds like a Toronto Maple Leafs fan right there, but that's because these franchises like the Avs, the Knights, the Maple Leafs, the Panthers, the Oilers, you're not sitting on your hands and knees thinking, man, I really wish that Martin Nietzsche does well in this round. It's not that conversation anymore. You're no longer the team in 2020 who won a first round, lost a second round. You're thinking, we'll get him next year. Does Natchez help you get, at the end of the day, if you give Natchez $10 million, does he get you over the hump of a round one or round two loss like we've seen in the last 3 years? I don't know. You gotta put it up if you're gonna get the contract. Now everybody plays better in a contract year because you're trying your hardest to get your bag for the next contract, especially with players getting paid more. You just saw Brock Nelson get $7.5 million, and you're thinking, I'm going to get $10 million. But if you're the Avalanche, you don't go above 9.5. You only go above 9.5 if you think that if this guy goes off for 110 points and you have every reason to believe that he's going to be doing that going forward, and he puts up over 12 points in the playoffs and a 7-game series, or you know, if he's just lights out. But with the status quo, I'm not convinced. And I don't think the Avalanche or any contending team should be. There was that article that was released that he was looking for first line minutes. Dude, you have it. You have it with Nathan MacKinnon. You could not ask for a better center. Do you want to play center? You're 6'3", 195. MacKinnon weighs more than you, and he's 3 inches shorter. I don't know what more. At some point, you need to take away your ideals from the process and realize that maybe you're just not that. You're not him like Nathan MacKinnon. You're not getting the 7-figure contract. You're getting a high 6-figure contract for sure. No one's going to take that away from you. I think 9.5 is a really good number. 9 might be a little. 8.5 is lowballing. 9 would kind of be, you know, generous, maybe throw in some incentives there like Toronto just did with Jonathan Tavares and what you just did with Brent Burns, you know. But you just like at some point, the self-belief conversation needs to be a reality check of, is he this guy? Is he? You've got one season to prove it. Best of luck to you. Gavin, what do you think?
No, I would say you're absolutely right. I mean, you're looking at playoff performance. You're looking at who you are as a player, and let's take a look at who you are as a player. You had issues in Carolina. That's why you had to sign a two-year deal for $6.5 million. You were known to have like problems with attitude, which is fine because Carolina is a bad organization and you don't ever want to play for them as a player.
Preach.
Above 70.
Oh God, here we go.
I'm sorry. Has Carolina won a cup?
We're coming for you, Surgecast. We're coming for you.
I'm confused.
Oh God.
Rip Nick.
No, you're never
winning a cup there, pal. But
to cut in here really quickly, I will say I don't know if it was as much attitude. I don't know if it was as much attitude as it was, you know, Rod Brendamore plays a very interesting game with blending around his lines. And I know this as a fan of them for many, many years of my life. It's a very aggravating thing as a fan, not having a consistent, you know, we can dependably see this guy, and this guy on this line, outside of the third line anyway. And I think that's the issue that Necas had the most problems with, was that he was not getting consistent top line minutes. He was not getting consistent first power play unit minutes. And I think when you come to Colorado, and that's the thing I think that I think of most when I look at Necas, is like, you're sitting next to a guy like Nathan MacKinnon. You're playing first line minutes, essentially taking Rantanen's role, or trying to help figure out what that looks like with Rantanen gone. And to sit there and say you're still unhappy, or to I think when you look at the $10 million, a lot of it comes from, okay, what other players are setting the bar with the cap going up? What does this look like then as well? Sorry to cut you off.
Let's just call it how it is, by the way, for the Carolina Hurricanes. You're just a more experienced Seattle Kraken. You've been doing the same thing for longer and you have better success. Sorry, Gavin.
I'm not talking about the 10-foot goal.
I think if we're talking about coaching and we're talking about like runs such a good like regular season system in Rod Brind'Amour, but very clearly kind of like runs people off and turns people away from actually wanting to play there. Rod Brind'Amour is definitely a guy like that, but I think it's absolutely fair to apply that to Jared Bednar in a system that just hasn't been working for the most part, and actively just turns away young players that if they don't earn the trust, they're not on the inside track and they don't get good playing time. So I think there's just some equal blame to apply there, except one organization has actually won a cup in the last few years and one hasn't. If we're talking about
hold that
Necas and his actual stats, like, okay, he wants $10 million. What have you done to deserve that? Like, well, I see a 83-point season. Like, oh, that's pretty good, guys. I mean, altogether, that's not bad. You have a 27-goal season. How'd you do in the playoffs? Under a point per game. Yeah, you're not getting $10 million.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen because you haven't done anything worthwhile in your entire career to justify that. I'm just saying when the guy that like you, the Avalanche actively traded you out for gets a hat trick in game seven and beats you and you don't do anything in game seven, and then you're going to turn around and demand $10 million. That's hilarious.
Hold on, Bailey, because I do want to hear you. I'm just going to put this in perspective real quick. If we're looking at players over $10 million in salary, right, in cap hits and everything like that, the guys who are making over $10 million in the current NHL right now, you have Jack Eichel, who probably should have won the Conn Smythe when Vegas won it, even though they gave it to Marchessault, whatever. You have Alexander Barkov, the best two-way forward in the NHL. You have Jonathan Huberdeau. When he signed that contract, let's not forget, he had 115 points. That's still 32 more than Necas, right? You have David Pastrnak, one of the best forwards in the NHL right now. You have William Nylander, another great forward in the NHL. You have Pettersson, Panarin, Rantanen, Marner, McDavid, MacKinnon, Matthews, and Draisaitl. That is franchise forward after franchise forward after franchise forward. Is Necas a franchise forward? No, he's not. Not yet. He can be.
I think he's somebody you can treasure on your core. I think he has the potential to get there.
That's great. But
player in the next couple of years?
That's great. But let's also put into perspective here real quick. Nikita Kucherov does not make $10 million. Now, he signed his contract a while ago, but he does not make $10 million. Mark Stone doesn't. Tkachuk doesn't. Barzal doesn't. Gensel doesn't.
And this ties into my point in saying the cap goes up here in the next couple years. When he's gets his contract, it's going to be over $100 million, which is why I think his mind is where it's at. Because you're looking at new age contracts versus old age contracts. Yes, these guys making 10 plus million are franchise forwards, franchise defensemen, players who are worthy of contracts like that. But there's also something to be said about setting a bar in a changing cap era.
That's perfectly fine. That's totally fine. And that's a really great point. However, everyone over making over $10 million right now, everyone on a seven-figure contract, we just talked about people who are the best of the best on their team.
I'm not discounting that.
Maybe minus Jonathan Huberdeau, but you know, when he signed that contract, he was that guy.
Give him his flowers.
Absolutely not.
How many cups has he won? How many how many rings?
How many first? How many like?
You guys many, are on like, it today.
Like, talk about minus 60 points going from one season to the next. Good Lord.
Talk about missing the fun. Like, Florida got good the second you left. That's crazy.
Yeah, seriously. Well, not because not his fault, really. Not his fault that Florida was already good. They just, you know.
Yeah, no. They just needed to trade you away for Matthew Kachuk.
To round out the Nature Sucks, too, I will say when
sorry, Gavin, we totally cut you off, by the way.
No, you're good. Okay. Absolutely jump in whenever you feel like it. But no, I mean, it's really just for me, it's like I look at Netches and I like to your point, Grant, all the other $10 million players, you're not that. I would have every single one of those motherfuckers over you because they've done better.
Maybe it, minus Huberdeau, though. Maybe minus Huberdeau.
Actually, don't give me Huberdeau. Don't lay that curse on me. But it's a situation where it's like, I don't – you look at, like, who the Avalanche traded for. It's like, oh, a guy that'll want to be here. Like, welcome, guys. Another Chris McFarland masterclass. We now have another guy that's possibly – we're going to have to trade again. We're just going through it once again. And it's a situation where it's like, I look at the Nuggets to like go outside of just hockey. And I look at like, they fired their GM, they fired their coach, and then they got immediately energized and they have a competent management group that's making a lot of moves. Can we get some of that over here? Because our management group seemed to be stagnant. They've been the same. We've had the same training staff for the last 8 years. We've had the same management group for the longest time. And it stopped producing outside of 1 year where we had probably the softest competition in the playoffs, not to discount the 2022 Stanley Cup run because that was amazing. And obviously we earned a very easy run because we got the first seed in like almost the entire NHL, only beaten by the President's Trophy winners, the Florida Panthers that year. But it's a situation where it's like, cool. Can we just like have a little bit of that in the Avalanche organization? Because it's very clear that this is not working. And
I don't know. We were just that good, though.
What's up? We were just that good. We haven't been that good in a few years. It's time for change.
And to round this out, I guess, talking my personal vision when it comes to a Netches contract, my ceiling, I think I would put it maybe 9.5, 9.6 for the player that we've seen so far. I think even that could be considered a little bit generous. And this is coming, like, I love watching Netches play. I think when you look at Colorado's game and how it shifted to accommodate him, their transitions became a lot better. I think his confidence is really kind of rounded out in the last couple of years, especially in this past year, to make him more confident in the ozone carrying the puck. There are some situations where he maybe gets a little too fancy with it, but that's something I think a lot of players struggled with last season on this roster, not just Netches. But you look at how what he was able to provide in a career season. I don't think giving him anything more than 9.5, 9.6 is an overpay for me. I think if you were to put that deal in front of him, he would be stupid not to take it.
I think the final thing is that we're really gonna know we will not know what a guy like Natchez is going to get until we see other contracts around the league.
Mm-hmm.
He's 27, but with the cap going up, so with the as everybody has been prophesizing and talking about, the 2026 NHL free agency is going to be the biggest in a while. Especially, you know,
what does it go up to? 113. I think.
Not the cap. I mean the NHL free agency.
Oh.
Because you're having the cream of the crop in terms of goalies, forwards, defensemen like coming up. But, you know, next year you're going to have guys like you're going to have guys like Martin Natchez. You'll have Adrian Kempe in there, who's going to be an interesting contract. You're going to have Kirill the Thrill, who the Wild are going to throw absolutely everything at.
Mm-hmm.
And it all depends on what you're seeing around the league. Another one kind of like Najis would be Robo with the Dallas Stars, seeing what he gets. Jack Eichel's kind of another one with the Vegas Golden Knights. You're going to see what he gets. And Najis is not a decision you make. As everybody says, they want to re-sign him now. You have to, especially how you've had your ass bit in the last few years from signing contracts really early. You're going to have to see the market on this one. You're going to have to see what other players are getting. Do not jump the gun on this.
To my point. Anyway.
You have great points.
I absolutely agree. I think that the market will always be set. But the only question I would have to ask about that is, why are the Avs always reacting? Why can't they just set the bar? Why can't they just get it done with their players?
Which is, I think, something they were maybe trying to do with the Brock Nelson deal.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think Brock Nelson is exactly market value. I think he is. I don't think
he was maybe a little high for my taste.
No, I think he could have gotten 7.5 no matter where he went. I think he would have gotten I don't think the Avs got a discount on him. I don't think they overpaid. I think they got exactly what second line centers were making on the open market. We were talking before, like Mikael Granlund was like an option for like a cheap second line center that you could maybe like get and cheap out on and then move that like extra $2 million for someone else. Nope, he got $7 million. I'd rather pay Brock Nelson $500,000 more than that. I look at almost everyone else and I say, like, I'm happy we have Brock Nelson. I think Brock Nelson has a lot to give, especially when we don't have an idiotic power play coach running this team. I think
we don't speak his name anymore.
It's Voldemort. We don't speak his name, all right? But no, it's a situation where I think the Avs have like a very good top six. I think they have a very good goaltending tandem, the Woodshed. They have like an incredible top pair that's always a top five defensive pairing in the league year after year. And even when it's like in decline, it's still like the fifth best defensive pairing. So it's like it's the best it can possibly be. And really, you're just looking at the bottom six and the bottom four defensemen to really fill out the rest of it. And that honestly, like, brings me out of like the negativity bias. And I just say, like, you know what? The Avs have minimal work to do, maybe one or two minor trades, and then they're looking good. Mm-hmm. But when, like, to your point, Grant, when you look at like the next NHL offseason and like all the potential they can have to be, do you really believe this front office is capable of actually doing something competent with it?
Yeah. I don't know. I think they would be really, really smart to wait this out until March. I don't think getting something done, I really think they rushed Mikko Rantanen. I feel like we could talk about this. This may be a conversation for another podcast too. I feel like that's a deal that maybe could have waited a month to see maybe what you could get with Mikko. With Necas, I think they would be really smart in learning from last year and taking as much time as possible to see the value. What are you getting? Look at, take a good look at the product, have good conversations with him and be like, okay, these are the problems we've been having the last couple postseasons. What can we shift? What needs to be done to potentially get more out of you come April, May, June? But again, to my point, I would love to see them wait until March to potentially make that decision on trade or sign. I would love to either see one of those two things happen before that trade deadline comes around. But to round things out, Grant, you had a kind of interesting, I think this is a good kind of conversation segue too, in talking about X factors for the upcoming season. Talked about how this roster really isn't rounded out quite yet. We're still potentially waiting on some final pieces in the bottom six to come through, maybe seeing something happen on the blue line to shift how that looks like, especially with the logjam you kind of have on the right side. But as it stands right now, Gavin, I will start with you. Who is the X factor for this upcoming Avalanche team in the 2025-26 season? And mind you, we've got a captain back. We've got Gabriel Landeskog on this roster now, looking to round out that bottom or that top six. I don't know. I'll throw it over to you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many directions you can go with it. And really, I think there's a few guys that I look at. If we're looking at like young players that I think can really start making an impact, I think it's Jack Drury. I think there's a reason why the Avs brought him over in the Rantanen trade. I think he's got a lot of potential, more so than people think he does. That and Sam Molinsky. I think that they're like the young, like new blood that should, that the Avs personally are hoping that they take big steps forward. Obviously, you mentioned the captain, like Gabe Landeskog coming back, coming into the playoffs, looking like borderline exactly how he was when he left. I don't think he'll be quite that level. I do think he'll be good. I don't know if he plays the full 82. I think there might be some load management there with what's happening, although he has had the full offseason to kind of recuperate, and he will have a full training camp with on a line with Nelson and Nichushkin. That was like one of the best lines in the playoffs in such a short sample size. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see that for a full season and just have, hopefully, fingers crossed, a second line.
General. To start the season, not just start, like a second line, yeah, a second not line just to March. Start the season.
But also like talking about Jack Drury and Molinsky for a little bit. Jack Drury for me has a lot of potential as a player. He was drafted in 2018 by the Carolina Hurricanes. He was over a point per game and the captain of his team in the USHL. He's then brought into the system a little bit. He plays double NCAA hockey. He's point per game there. He goes to the AHL, plays a few years there, is good. Not point per game, because it's kind of hard to be in the AHL. But
won a Calder Cup champion and with the
also Chicago granted Wolves. An alternate captain. He was granted a letter in the AHL. So obviously a kid with a lot of character, so young at 25 years old. So I think like, and you're telling me a guy like that caps out as a fourth line center? I don't think so. I think he has a lot of potential. He was log jammed in Carolina. He was log jammed surprisingly enough in Colorado at center, which is like unheard of. But yeah, he was made the fourth line center. And I think he has a lot of potential to be the third line center. And if you get him a third line wing, Evan Rodriguez, I think that'll be absolutely great with Ross Colton on his right wing. And that will be completely amazing to see how he takes off. Sam Molinsky, get more than 15 points, buddy. Like, prove you're an actual NHL defenseman, especially now that he's getting paid more money. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Who are your rising stars?
I think the biggest X factor for the Avalanche come this season, like you said, is Jack Drury. The hole at 3C right now is the biggest one, and it's going to be one that's going to be talked about all season. Ross Colton should be in there too, definitely. You're getting paid $4 million, dude. We need it. We need it now. And I think the last one really is I think Brent Burns can be a real difference maker here. We should just honestly name this the Brent Burns Glazing podcast at this point. with so much we talk about him, but we need depth pieces to step up. It's like a couple years ago when we were looking for a 2C. We need someone to step up. If someone doesn't do it, people are going home.
I feel like this is the X factor, and Jack Drury is getting yeses from all of us. This was going to be the guy that I mentioned, and just basing not even basing on my thoughts off of Chris McFarland's comments after the draft and saying that he's a fourth line center who we think can bring a lot more. I think he's absolutely proven that he has that capability. You bring him in as a depth guy, you bring him in to increase your odds in the faceoff dot, especially as a depth guy. To your point, Gavin, he's got leadership on his side. You've got a guy who played on a really, really good Harvard team. I don't think if you're looking at a younger guy, a depth guy to make an impact, Jack Drury is the obvious answer here. Now, as far as like overall X factors, like who is like the biggest difference maker on this team? I mean, you look at the top guys. You look at a Nathan MacKinnon. You look at a Cale Makar. Especially, I'm looking to see a little bit more out of Cale, especially looking at his postseason stats from this past season. for somebody who's going into a contract year, who's looking for that extension, which he is going to get. I have no doubts about that. Again, mentioning my blank check statement, I think he's a guy you give a blank check to. However much he's demanding, you give that to him, no ifs, ands, or buts. I'm looking for a little bit more from him this season. I think, especially going into a contract year, we talked about how those tend to be some of the best years for players. I think this is going to be not that he's not already a shining star, obviously a two-time Norris Trophy winner, but I think he makes a big splash in this upcoming season as well.
No, I don't doubt it. I think we're about to enter like World Eater Makar era, because he's only 26 years old. So he's about to be 27. He's about to enter his prime. He already has 30 goals as a defenseman, which hasn't been done since Mike Green. He's absolutely going to be entering some of the best hockey years of his career. Co-align that with MacKinnon already being in his best hockey years, and you are getting probably 2 years of some of the best chances the Avalanche have. And it's up to the front office to honor them. I don't think the front office can, because I think they should all be fired. But that's besides the point.
That's another podcast.
But really, I think that as much as I hate on it, I think the top six is set to do so. I mean, you've got your second line veteran center in Brock Nelson backing you up, has been a good playoff performer his entire career. And you saw it in the playoffs, like when second Gabe Landeskog was moved up to his line, they played well. So I think that there's tons of potential for this Avalanche lineup to go far. Pete DeBoer has been fired, so Dallas made the biggest mistake of their entire life. Avalanche win cup, I guarantee you now. It's really now a question of just how good Makar can get. And I think Makar has an 100-point season cooking up in the processor, whatever you want to call it. We know he's capable of getting 30 goals. I think if he gets a little luckier, he'll get 35. I think that, honestly, he's fantastic. And he truly is Bobby Orr reincarnated. Somebody go find Bobby Orr, because I think he's wearing a Makar mask. But yeah, I'll throw it over to you guys.
Sorry, I thought Grant was getting ready to go there as well.
I'm talking about ghosts, apparently. I'm talking about the wall. It's been me the whole time, guys.
What you're hearing is an illusion. No, but with that said, that's going to do it for today's episode, or this week's episode of the podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode. Gavin, we'll start off with you. Where can the people find you and all of your extracurriculars?
Sure. So go ahead and find me on Avalanche Digest. We're a YouTube channel. We do a lot of short form content. So we cover like all of the latest news regarding the Colorado Avalanche. We talk a lot about trade rumors. We basically talk about anything we can, because this offseason is very slow. The people are calling it the worst offseason of all time across the entire NHL. And yeah, we talk about everything, to all of the Netches trade rumors, to basically what can possibly happen with this roster. So go ahead and find me on there and you won't regret it.
Grant, where can the people find you?
Well, you can find me on my ex, or you could just find me in the comment section of Bailey Curtis's Twitter, really. That's where you'll see me probably the most, just saying, you know, giving some random feedback and saying things that probably isn't all that true.
As for myself, you can find me over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that's Bailey with two Y's. Find me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. If you're looking for some of my written content, I am the Avalanche beat writer and co-site editor over at The Hockey News, your resident girl on the ground at every home game. Find my articles over at The Hockey News. You can find a link tree in my bio to find not only all of my articles, but where to find all of my socials, where to listen to episodes here.
as far as the podcast goes. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. Be sure to follow us on X at Avs Warning Pod. There's a link tree in our bio where you can find all of our listening platforms and where to follow us, where to find a lot of our extracurriculars, not only my writing, but Gavin's work with Avs Digest. But yeah, and to cap it off as well, be sure you guys go give some love over to the Hockey Podcast Network. If you're looking for any other coverage regarding teams on the East Coast, on the West Coast, looking for Shorzy content, the Hockey Podcast Network has that as well. Be sure to go follow them over on X at HockeyPodNet. With that said, again, that's going to do it. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you guys next time here at the Avalanche Warning. Bye.